Michelle Anderson is a botanist and plant ecologist. She joins us periodically to talk about phenology or what's going on in our woods and waters right now. Welcome, Chell.
Good to be with you.
So we recently talked about cold weather and deep snow.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to talk about Subnivian microbes.
Yeah, this is something that with the deep snow this year, I've thought so much about the Subnivian. And whenever I've had the chance, when I'm out doing something in the snow, I like to look, dig down and just kind of get a sense of, ooh, just what's it like down there right now? And come up with a good way to get a thermometer down there. But we know that with snow this deep, I mean, I can take it on faith from others who have looked at this carefully, much more carefully than I probably would, that's right around 32 down below this snowpack that we have now. And it's a whole different environment mm-hmm. than it is many days up on the surface. We've talked a number of times and referred to a number of times to the Subnivian and the life that relies on that particular zone of the winter landscape. We haven't talked before about microbes. It certainly isn't something that I had given any real thought to until a few years ago when I initially read this paper about this, and it just blew me away to think about how little I, for sure, and even we collectively really grasp the complexity of the relationships between things like snowfall, timing of snowfall, so this is going to come into play here, and microbes and carbon dioxide and nitrogen now in the winter, but also in the spring. It's just such a wonderful example of the complexity and the delicacy of these big things, but they include the massive scale, right? So snow is covering a huge part of the earth right now, but also the minute, right? Because these are microbes, things that even though I go digging in the Subnivian,
you can't see them.
I can't see them. So it turns out that when fall comes and plants slowly die and then they freeze, eventually there's a frost and they're killed. But eventually that plant material dies. And when the freezing happens, cells are ruptured. So that means carbon dioxide gets released. So depending upon the specific conditions of the freezing and how severe the cell rupturing is, and so on, and how long that goes on, there can be a significant loss, like up to 50% of the carbon dioxide that a plant has been harboring during its growth is released into the air. So that could be a lot of carbon dioxide. And we're all pretty aware that CO2 in the atmosphere is a big deal. But this is the natural order of things. Things freeze, die, release their carbon dioxide, these plant materials. Well, it turns out that what's become recognized more recently is that the timing of when snow falls has an impact on that. And that is because of the microbes and how they respond to the cover of snow or a lack of cover of snow. So when we get a freeze, some freezes, plants die, they begin to release carbon dioxide. If snow comes and insulates them, that process slows way down. And it also provides a thawing effect, right? Because we know that then the temperature doesn't get so cold down below. It's right there at 32. Mm-hmm. And so that provides the perfect place for microbes, soil microbes, to just bloom. Because there's all this plant material, so all these things for them to consume. And this perfect environment, it's kind of moist, it's not too cold, it's not too dry. And so there's this big boom of microbes. And they, in turn, in the process of all their growth, and they release a lot of carbon dioxide.
They don't consume it, they release it.
They are a part of releasing carbon dioxide. And that can move up through the snowpack. At the same time, they are also picking up nitrogen. So they become this big storage center for nitrogen. They get nitrogen from the snowpack. They also get nitrogen from where they're feeding, from their environment of the soil, the ground, and the plants they're eating, and so on. So there's that aspect. When the snow comes early, this is how things unfold. if the snow comes late and we have lots of freezing, the soil freezes down deep, the net effect of that can be a drying. Just like if you put something in the freezer for a long time, it gets freeze dried. Well, that's what happens at the soil surface, is it kind of freeze dries. And so then if the snow comes, you don't have those Goldilocks conditions. So there's the food is still there, but the conditions for the microbes is not so great. So they slow way down. They're there and there's some activity, but nothing like there is with the early arrival of snow. So one might think, well, this is maybe a good thing because that slows down all this release of carbon. I mean, but if those microbes don't have a good bloom in the winter in that subnivian area, and they don't harbor all that nitrogen, become the stockpile of nitrogen, then that isn't there in the spring. The time when there's a big release of nitrogen then from these microbes, just when the plants can really take great advantage of it. So that's missing if they're not there in the spring. You know, the plants may well fare fine later on, but it's missing there in the spring. And in some situations, some circumstances, it can actually stunt the growth of plants, depending upon how the summer and the rest of the growing season plays out. So in each of those scenarios, there are these trade-offs between, because if the plants don't grow, if the plants are more stunted because they didn't get that good send-off in the spring, then that means that they are sequestering less carbon from the atmosphere over the course of the growing season. So there's this incredible delicate dance between the microbes, the plants, the nitrogen, the CO2, and the arrival of snow. So if you ever feel like you're in control, think again.
I never think that.
Good.
Jill Anderson regularly fills us in on current events in the woods. Thanks for talking to us about subnivian microbes.
Welcome.